You and I back together again, chatting it up, starting a brand new week, Monday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today, where we talked about a brand new tool being used by local police to try and avoid high-speed chases, but it's still being criticized by some civil liberties groups. Is that criticism unfounded? Republican State Senator Rob Sampson joined us to talk about a hearing earlier in the day regarding homeschooling regulations in the state. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill talked about media personalities venturing into politics, while CBS News Washington correspondent Nicole Killian had the latest on the fate of the 2017 Trump tax cuts as far as the present Congress is concerned.
So I can recall not too long ago, maybe last few months, seeing the front of police cruisers. And I don't remember exactly where I saw it, but I saw the front of a police cruiser, and it had a little black box on it. And I said, geez, I wonder what that's for. And I can't remember where it was, but I've always had that, vision still in my head there, because I'm pretty good with toys and with, you know, high-tech stuff with cops. And I'm wondering, geez, what is that? It's a moderately sized black box with wires coming out of it, affixed to the grill of a police cruiser. And I read a story today and I see a picture of it again. I said, yes, that's what I saw. And now I get it. And that little black box, now that I know what it is suddenly the center of some controversy in the state again, putting civil libertarians against the police. What am I talking about here? Excellent story. You should check this out at the Hearst site. Christine Dempsey's story. Connecticut State, Connecticut Police are launching, get this, dart-like GPS trackers at fleeing cars. Some question their legality. And again, there are some departments in the state that are buying these launchable. I know this is something out of like James Bond. The cops apparently are able to, if you take off from them, if they start chasing you after they've had you stopped and you won't pull over, they can now launch from either a handheld device or the front grille of their cruiser. They can launch a GPS device and avoid a potentially dangerous high-speed chase and just keep an eye on you with the remote convenience, and then just get you later, which I thought was what everybody wanted, right? How long have we heard in this state over and over and over and over and over again for years, hey, let's cut down on the dangerous high-speed chases? Even the cops don't like to do high-speed chases unless it's a murder suspect, unless it's, you know, somebody who may still have a weapon, somebody who is in imminent danger, posing an imminent threat to the community. So apparently these GPS trackers are out there, much to the chagrin of the civil libertarians in the state. And this is a very interesting story. I'm not going to get into the Uber specifics here, but it talks to police from a couple of police departments, including in New Britain, who said, hey, rather than get into a potentially dangerous, right, nobody wants this, high-speed chase, who knows if there are young folks driving, would they do something potentially crazy or dangerous, would they do this in, you know, various areas that could be tight for, the safety of bystanders. The cops can have the authority, if they stop somebody, to fire these or this or one, a GPS unit, boom, lands on the car, sticks to the car, I guess by a really powerful magnet. The car drives away. They think they lost the cops. Arrests made last month in Newington illustrate why the enforcement is investing in GPS launchers. These launchers allow cops, officers, to find and arrest suspects without having to pursue them in dangerous and sometimes deadly high-speed chases. Now, I have no problem with this. I have zero problem with this. To me, it's a simple solution here. Don't run from the cops. Yeah, you may be in trouble. Yeah, you may have warrants. Yeah, you may have a gun or pot or crystal meth or something in the car. That's too bad. You got stopped. Don't run from the cops. However, there are people who don't think this is fair. And there are people who are also playing the race card and the poverty card in this already, in testimony in Hartford. I'm all for this. I don't care. If you get pulled over, don't run. Don't do anything dumb. And you won't have to have a cop firing a GPS stick-on unit to your vehicle. Now, I'm all right with this. What about you? Now, we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the opposition to this. I don't care. Again, it's not like they automatically stick one of these on you when they pull you over. Now, if you're going to be a moron, a cavone, an idiot, and run, sure they should do this. Because this way, they don't have to engage in a high-speed pursuit. I thought that's one thing we were all trying to avoid here. Am I right or not? I don't know. You tell me. Very simple, and it's our question of the day on Facebook, facebook.com/voiceofct. Are you in favor of police in Connecticut launching DART-like GPS trackers at fleeing cars instead of engaging in high-speed chases? Are you okay with this? I sure am. But again, there are some civil libertarians who don't think this is warranted. Are we trying to tie the hands of police again here in this state? What am I talking about? Well, we're talking about the ability now of police cars, police cruisers, police SUVs, or even the men and women of local police to launch if your vehicle won't stop for them, or if they stop for an officer and then pull away. There is the ability here, apparently, for police to launch magnetic GPS units that will stick to the alleged offending vehicle as it drives away. And then, therefore, the cops, the fine men and women of law enforcement, ostensibly don't have to engage in a high-speed chase, which I guess is what a lot of these civil libertarian groups don't like as well. And apparently these are being purchased now, and there's an effort in Hartford to, of course, what else? Tie the hands of police, tie the hands of men and women of the police force, and say, well, no, we've got to take a closer look at this. No, 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 you people in Hartford, no, you don't have to take a closer look at this. There are federal privacy laws. Even the American Civil Liberties Union, I see here, the ACLU, says the DART chase system is okay as long as it's used on a fleeing vehicle. And as long as the device is removed as soon as police catch up to the person they were chasing. This is not for long-term surveillance. You don't need a warrant here. But again, you've got, you know, people in the General Assembly, people giving testimony here, trying to tie the hands of law enforcement. The Office of the Chief Public Defender of this state saying, quote, there is simply no question that permitting a police officer to launch or to place a GPS system onto another vehicle without a warrant is unconstitutional. Well, no, this is not the kind of system that court case was referring to. Again, this is not hard. If you don't want cops, including some in various Connecticut cities or towns, to launch a system like this, then I have an idea. When the cop says, get out of the car or put the car in park, I know. Crazy me. Maybe you should comply. A lot of people don't understand the word comply, I don't think. C-O-M-P-L-Y. Look it up. There'll be a test later. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Chris Williams is looking over some of the early responses we have to our question of the day. Not too complicated. Are you in favor of Connecticut police departments launching DART-like GPS trackers at fleeing vehicles instead of engaging in
high-speed chases. Chris, what do we have for some of the answers so far?
Well, the most complicated comes from Glenmo, who said, definitely, unfortunately, Lamont and the Democrats have removed police officers' immunity so they can be sued personally. That's why police won't chase them. They can be sued personally. Now, I've heard this from 10 different police officers, which is why they won't chase illegal dirt bikes either. I think the darts would be a good idea, especially in the case of illegal dirt bike in quad riders.
All right. Anything else we have there?
And then there are three simply say yes, Joe, Patrick, and Vincent. And Daniel says it would be safer. And Paul also says yes, technology to the rescue.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, there you go. So I guess most people think this is a no-brainer, I would think. These darts are cylindrical-shaped GPS units or tracking tags that can fit in the palm of your hand. They're propelled by compressed air, so there's no kind of ammunition used here. The ones in the vehicle launchers, those little black boxes you see on the front of vehicles, are fired from flip-covered containers attached to a patrol car's grill. An adhesive, so it's not a magnet, I was wrong, an adhesive allows them to stick to the back of a fleeing vehicle. So again, I have no problem with this, but again, there, you know, will be people who don't like this. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. But again, the question is, even when all the wish lists, even when all the desires of people on the left are met, they still don't like it. I mean, listen to this. And you know, sometimes the ACLU of Connecticut, I mean, they might have, I have to be careful here. I was good. No, don't say that, Paul. Sometimes the ACLU of Connecticut here is mind-boggling in their opposition to things, and they usually base it solely on race or on socioeconomic status. So if your skin is a certain color, according to the ACLU, or if your income level is below a certain level, then you should have different standards. So we now administer and support law enforcement because of melanin in somebody's skin or because of, you know, perhaps what's in their bank accounts. Chelsea Infinity Gonzalez, Public Policy and Advocacy Director for the ACLU of Connecticut, said this, quote, this is mind-numbing. By the way, you know, if you're a member of the ACLU, you know, the National ACLU, you may want to tell the Connecticut chapter here, you know, stop being so damned alarmist at everything. Expanding police powers in this way not only invites abuse, but deepens the mistrust communities already feel toward law enforcement. That's code word for black and Hispanic. Whenever you hear the word or see the word communities, as if those communities can follow the law. Well, sometimes, you know. But nothing frosts me off that, well, certain communities, you know, are afraid. Well, what about the communities that aren't afraid? I'm sorry. Skin color, it's enough. Enough with that. If a cop chase you and pulls you over, don't. I have news for you. Nobody from certain communities is going to have to fear for anything if they stay calm, if they put the vehicle in park, if they don't run, and geez, I don't know, if they comply with what police officers, oftentimes themselves, women and minorities, ask people to do. She continued, quote, giving police the authority to launch GPS trackers onto people's cars without a warrant. Again, you don't need a warrant here if there's an immediate danger. And she's a lawyer. Without a warrant raises serious civil liberties concerns. You know, I love how the ACLU and all these groups, every time there's a police stop, they want to conduct a constitutional law class. That's not what the cops are for. The cops are to ask you to do something, and they're going to ask you again and again and again. And if by the 23rd time you don't do it, guess what? Bad things can and usually happen. We should be protecting people's privacy rights, not creating new avenues for unchecked surveillance. Good God. Put down the George Orwell. Here's a guy who I'm sure has very little to say. He's going to be very quiet about what happened at the Capitol today. No, I don't think so. It's Rob Sampson, Republican State Senate Member, District 16, Cheshire, Prospect, Wolcott, Southington, and Waterbury. Rob, good afternoon. Promise me you won't hold back, okay? Will you make me that promise? Is that all right?
You never have to worry about me, Paul. I've got a lot of passion on this issue and a lot of other ones as well.
All right, so Rob, let's we played some of Steve Harding, your leader's audio heading into this before the news at the top of the hour. So what exactly took place up at the Capitol today, connecting in some way, shape, or form homeschooling, which of course has to have some sort of regulation, and what happened with this tragedy in Waterbury? So explain all this to my listeners.
Well, I will start by saying that the big news is what's going on right now, which is that there are literally thousands of people here at the Capitol singing the national anthem, chanting, and demonstrating effectively in direct response to what the Democrats have done, which is to host an what's called an informational hearing about potentially starting to regulate homeschooling in a much larger way than currently happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is being done completely outside of the normal legislative process, Paul. I mean, normally you have proposed legislation and you have a public hearing where people are allowed to come and voice their concerns. They have done this in such a way to block out any of the actual voices on the side of protecting homeschooling. And they're trying to connect the dots between what, in my view, is something completely unrelated, which is this tragedy that occurred in the city of Waterbury, where this was not a homeschooled kid. This is a captive, a prisoner. And effectively, it's a failure of government and not a failure of homeschooling.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, Rob, obviously you had, I guess, one or two visits by the cops, DCF, who first said, well, no, we have no more records. Oh, wait a minute. We found some records. Understood. They go back years. But the guy, Rob, was sadly apparently lost in the system here. So is the whole homeschooling thing just a diversion here? Would I be wrong in saying that or what? You tell me.
Well, I don't think it's a diversion. I think it is a desired political overreach that is occurring using that as an excuse. Just like any time mm-hmm. there's a shooting anywhere under the sun, you're going to have Chris Murphy sending out emails to his supporters looking for money. Well, this is the same kind of situation. The Democrats have an agenda, and their agenda is all about power and control, creating a dependent society, and interfering with parents' rights. They want to replace the parents with the government. I mean, that's who the Democrats are. And I think that they just see this as an opportune moment to seize that issue as a mechanism to put more controls on homeschool families, which in my view, they don't deserve more regulation. What they deserve is support and not suspicion, not surveillance, and not bureaucratic obstacles. These are people that purposely are trying to avoid the government. And I'm in favor of letting them. I mean, they are the boss. Our system works by people being free and electing a representative government that works for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats apparently they haven't caught on to that yet.
You know, Rob Sampson, and I guess the guest is Rob Sampson, 16th District State Senate member. Rob, I remember when this happened, we caught note of this horrible thing. Thankfully, this guy was rescued from, I know, years of captivity. We all heard, Rob, from the other side, well, we're gonna investigate what happened. And I heard some of your Democratic colleagues saying, well, we need answers. Well, have you? I don't know, Rob. I'm not in the same circles you are. Have you heard any of that happening at all? Or is this just a sideshow, maybe, hopefully not, to make sure that doesn't happen? Have you heard anything?
Well, I've heard a lot of things. I mean, it's hard to verify what's accurate, what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, Paul, part of the problem is that because that's a criminal investigation, which is going to go on for some time. I mean, I doubt that trial is going to happen anytime in the near future. I suspect that a lot of what will be uncovered in that investigation regarding, you know, what DCF knew and, you know, what they did about it, that kind of thing, we may not find out about that for some time.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think it's quite clear. There were certainly people that came forward as a result of that who were aware of what was going on to some level.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, you know, when you've got the kid in school who's picking through the trash, I mean, DCF was aware of this kid. The whole idea that somehow if a child is, connected to DCF in some way, that as soon as they're not part of the public school system anymore, DCF's job is done. I don't think one thing has anything to do with the other. DCF still should have pursued this situation. And I don't think anyone's ever claimed that that kid was homeschooled. He was a prisoner, not a student.
Rob, let's shift gears to something that was highlighted by the folks at the Connecticut Mirror a few days ago. And normally we don't see these things till much longer or deeper in the budget process, but it's called a rad, not a physical rad, not a little furry friend of the Capitol, but these initiatives, Rob, shall we call these, are policies that make their way into bills. They usually have to do with money. Yet now, what is this one, Rob, to do with benefits that nobody seems to want to admit that they put in there? What exactly happened?
Right. Well, you know what's funny, Paul, is that, I mean, a rat is usually a small piece of a larger piece of legislation that kind of snuck in where nobody knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily call this a rat because it's not, you know, roaming the corridors in the dark of night. You know, this is something that was right in front of people, you know, as large as life. And basically what it is, it's an advertisement that the Democrats believe very sincerely in political patronage and protecting their friends. I mean, because they're in power, they control, you know, all three branches of government. They are in a position to start, you know, creating quasi-public agencies and then putting their friends in important high-paying positions. And this is just an example of how they're going to try and continue some folks, you know, maybe health benefits that they have in the legislature when they go on to become some executive in some quasi-public. It's a disgrace. But again, I don't consider it a rat. I know the Mirror called it that. I think it was blatant. And what's important is to note that, you know, the party line, the vote was on party lines. Every Republican said, no, we don't believe in this type of political patronage and abuse of our taxpaying constituents, but they do.
And Rob, finally, while we have you here, the budget process, I know you folks in the GOP did actually issue a printed budget the other day. I know some years it doesn't happen because the folks on the other side literally won't look at it. But any shot for any in this cycle, Rob, any bipartisan talks or chats or negotiation on this or not?
Well, there's certainly always conversations that are going on right to the last minute. You know, the real shame of it, Paul, is that the budget, in my experience, is really drafted in a back room somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to serve on the Appropriations Committee. I used to serve on the Finance Committee. Worked very hard, worked in a very bipartisan fashion with my colleagues, and we came up with a lot of good ideas.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the product, the work product that we put together, ultimately never saw the light of day because it's a couple of lawyers and a couple of, budget gurus in the governor's office and the Senate Democrats that ultimately draft the document that we vote on. And that's a real shame. So I suspect that there are folks, you know, across the building. I know that the House Republicans have offered their own budget alternative. And I think that's a mechanism to try and get the House Democrats to come to the table on some of these things. I don't see any possibility that there's going to be a budget worth supporting this year. I believe the Democrats have too many promises they want to keep to their constituent bases. You know, they take care of state employees first. Mm-hmm. Then they take care of the various, special interests and dependents that they've created. And they grow that year after year. And it's a hard thing to maintain. So in a case like this, I really think it's going to be hard enough just to even get enough municipal aid in the budget to keep it, you know, with something that should keep pace. And I don't see them limiting spending or taxation in any way. I expect a big tax hike.
All right, Rob Sampson. Rob, thanks. Be good to fight the fight. And we'll talk to you later. Thank you, sir.
You can count on it, Paul. Thanks for having
me. All right. Republican State Senator Rob Sampson. He represents the 16th District, Cheshire, Prospect, Southington, Wolcott, and Waterbury, and or sections thereof. Yes, I'm here. And I have chosen not to self-deport, although I could use the $1,000. You know, you never listen. $1,000 is $1,000, but you know, self-deporting to Connecticut, I don't think that works. I don't know. I'll ask Terry Cowgill, a columnist for Substack.com and the Connecticut News Junkie. Terry, any idea that the feds would buy my self-deporting line? What do you think?
No, I don't think they'd buy it at all. They I think the feds know you by now because you're a famous radio personality.
Oh, yeah.
I did self-deport to Texas
from
Connecticut. I did that voluntarily.
And you're being, and from what
no,
I can,
I don't pay any. I don't pay any income taxes.
Kind of nice.
As a result,
kind of nice,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's 6 months of the day, and I'll just get my toes wet, and I come back to Connecticut, enjoy the beautiful summer season, and go up to the Berkshires, and hack around with a lot of my friends.
Nice. Now, must be nice. Now, how you feeling? How's the hip rehab coming? In case some folks you don't know, Terry fractured his hip, broke his hip replacement and all that. Happened to my mom. How many hundreds of thousands of people go through this? You feeling better?
Yeah, I actually am now. You know, the strange thing is that I was starting to get a lot better, and somehow I pulled a muscle in my butt, and it was a muscle that I didn't even know existed. It's this tiny little muscle that connects this pelvis with the hip joint, the piriformis. And that thing, it could take a year to heal, they say.
Wow.
But it's starting to feel better, and I do a lot of PT. And I'll tell you, I found all of these physical – you've probably been through physical therapy before, right?
Just once briefly for one or two visits. No, knock on wood, I've been okay with that stuff. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of – I say it's evenly split between men and women, the physical therapists. And you would think the women would be more gentle.
No.
They're brutal. It's unbelievable. But I'll tell you what, they put it through, they're pretty brutal in many ways, but I get out of there and I feel 100% better. So I wish I could do it. I wish I could afford to do it every day, but insurance will only cover so much.
Yeah. Terry, you've been, of course, observing things near and far, and you sent me a link to a piece here. About a fascinating guy who I think America's trying to still figure out is Democratic Senator John Fetterman, a hero of mine. He in his shorts, his running shoes, and his hoodie. But
his hoodie,
This is a guy who has been through a lot physically, mentally. He doesn't sound like the same guy position-wise on his stuff. And you sent me a link to a really interesting article about him just some wild stuff here.
Yeah, it really is a sad thing, I think, because he's a kind of an enigmatic figure in many ways because, he doesn't fit neatly into the Democratic or Republican box.
Mm-hmm.
Especially – lately he's extremely pro-Israel now.
Yeah.
He's in a way that most Democrats are not. He said and done some things, some politically incorrect things that have rankled Democrats and rubbed them the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But you will recall when he was running for Senate, first running for Senate, he had a stroke.
Yeah.
And was hospitalized and then was hospitalized for depression. And I recall when that happened and, he had this auditory processing problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you'd see at debates that he would need to have a transcription of the questions and all of the dialogue provided to him because he couldn't understand it when it was being when he was hearing it. So I went on social media. I said, I don't have anything against the man. He really should step aside because he can't really function in this way. Pennsylvania is going without a senator at this point. And I was attacked by progressives on social media as
really?
Being an ableist and all of this stuff. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was really ugly. And now, lo and behold, many of those things are happening. He apparently isn't taking his meds. He's had an awful lot of problems with his staff, very high turnover. He can be seen wandering around in the middle of the night aimlessly. He says and does extremely inappropriate things. Most tellingly, He drives so recklessly that none of his staff, or none of what is left of his staff, will dare set foot in the car with him.
Jeez.
Because he scares the hell out of them, all of them.
And he is still a sitting U.S. Senate member.
Yeah, he still is, and as I say, it really is very sad, and there's obviously something terribly wrong with him. But you know, he's not. I don't think he's going to step aside anytime soon. And I think, well, maybe the only time he would is if his fellow Democrats in the Senate, you know, said maybe it is time to step aside. But it is a fascinating kind of thing because, you know, I think we've had a lot of senators and Congress people with mental health issues. Yeah. We just don't know about them. With him, it's really front and center.
There was a quote, Terry, and the guest is Terry Calgill. There was a quote, I think in a Politico piece, they asked Jim Himes, along with some other members of Congress. I think Rosa DeLauro was asked this, too, pretty much about what you said. Now, she kind of skirted the question, but if I remember it, you could look for this. Politico asked Himes, DeLauro, and about five or six or seven other people some questions, Terry. And one of the questions, I'm paraphrasing here, was, you know, Congressman, be frank with us, level with us. Do you have colleagues that just aren't with it anymore? And he very skillfully, without saying yes, said yes, to the point where I think he said a handful of people or there's obviously some. I mean, Terry, that's frightening, isn't it? Or should it be?
Well, yeah, and I think we all remember, well, you and I are certainly old enough to remember Strom Thurmond, who was like 100 years old by the time he finally got out of the Senate.
I know.
And literally for the last, like, 3 or 4 years of his career in the Senate, Strom Thurmond was living in a hospital. And they would transport him from the hospital to the Senate every day to, I guess, do his job. And that was, you know, well known.
Yeah.
But he's right. Absolutely. Himes is right that there's a lot of people in the Senate who are functionally just not there. Mm. But it's so hard to get the word out. And, you know, no opponent running against him really wants to go there because for fear of being called what I was called on social media by these people.
Yeah. Well, finally, Terry, you ask a question that's interesting because I was reading a story about him over the weekend. How does President Stephen A. Smith sound to you? Huh? How about that?
Yeah, I don't get that. I mean, he is a sports commentator. Yeah. Does he have any background in politics?
I don't think so.
I looked at his biography. Yeah. I don't know how that works exactly, but you know, I saw that you know, that Stephen A. Smith was floating the idea of running for president, and I sort of thought, what kind of connection is there between sports and politics? And I found it interesting. There's an entire list on Wikipedia of people who were involved with sports and are going into and went into politics.
Sure.
And they range from, you know, Jack Kemp and, you know, Bill Bradley and all kinds of, I think, very distinguished people went on to have great careers, and some who were not all that well known. And some that I didn't even know went into politics.
Yeah.
Like Alan Page, you know, the great lineman for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
He not only went into politics, he went to law school after he retired from the Vikings and then became a sitting member of the Supreme Court of the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. And these guys and gals will all tell you, you know, the discipline I learned, the teamwork I learned help. I mean, look, in Congress right now, you've got a guy who's hardly quiet, Tommy Tuberville there in the Senate there. So, and in fact, I will say, as one of the six Jets fans in Connecticut, a former New York Jets defensive back, do you know this, Terry? Burgess Owens is a congressman now in the House. How about that?
That is impressive. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, that, you know, sports and politics have been intertwined for a long time, not just in that regard, but in the sense that, you know, the terminology is a lot of that is the same. You know, you have the horse race, you have the underdog, you have they square off in debates,
yeah,
and who's up and who's down and that kind of thing. And so you have a lot of people from sports and politics who do, and of course you have a guy like Arnold Schwarzenegger,
sure,
who was I guess you could say he was involved in sports if
want
to consider bodybuilding to be sports, right?
Yeah.
And then then also from the entertainment world because of all the movies he made, and Ronald Reagan of course came from the entertainment world,
mm-hmm.
So. It is amazing the kinds of professions that tend to steer people toward politics. Everybody says it's the law, really, because it's like, more than half of Congress, mm-hmm. and the Senate and the House are lawyers.
Yeah.
But it seems that you could look and find a lot of athletes and a lot of people who are in the entertainment business as well.
As well. Terry, continue the rehab. Have a happy week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Terry Cowgill there, Substack.com and the Connecticut News Junkie.
Hey, did you guys and gals know that there is a chance for a lot of you your taxes could be going up? Now, it's not exactly a bill that would raise your taxes in D.C. It's a bill that would maintain some tax cuts from a bunch of years back. And you may say, well, it's the Republicans. This will fly through. Well, no, not necessarily. Joining us right now from D.C. to talk about this and more, CBS News correspondent Nicole Killian is on with us. Nicole, good afternoon. How are you?
Good.
So this scenario now here of extending the Trump tax cuts, which were back, in term number one, right, 2017, where does this stand right now?
Well, we're still waiting to find out is a short answer. House Republicans and Senate Republicans have been working on this so-called big, beautiful bill that the president has been pushing for the better part of this year. But this is really the opportunity where they can put pen to paper. And so a number of different proposals have been thrown around to extend the president's tax cuts. And Speaker Mike Johnson in particular has made clear that he would like to clear this bill out of his chamber by Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that a lot of these committees, like House Ways and Means, which handles the tax portion of this bill, really have to get to work in terms of crafting that legislation. And as I mentioned, there are a lot of lingering questions about, you know, what's in, what's out. For instance, you know, salt, I know, is a big issue there in the Northeast,
yeah.
Whether or not that is something that is going to, if they'll extend the cap on the salt deduction, that is something that is still under negotiation, among other things. So until they get some of these issues resolved, we still don't know exactly what will be in it, but lawmakers are very confident that they can hopefully have some type of product, if not this week, certainly by next week, which is when they would like to start marking up this legislation.
And Nicole, I saw over the weekend, I mean, a lot of people, obviously, you're hearing this down there too. Hey, this budget cuts too much. That's primarily coming from Democrats. There are some Republicans, right, who, did I read, they don't think it cuts enough. They want even deeper cuts. Is that what I read?
Well, exactly. And that's another internal fight that Republicans are having in terms of how big or small these cuts should be. You know, you have a lot of moderate Republicans who are very hesitant to, for instance, cut Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
They may want to tinker around the edges in terms of looking at, for instance, waste, fraud, and abuse, but they don't want to gut the program. They don't want to roll back benefits. Furthermore, the president has made clear that is something that he doesn't want to touch either, but it still begs the question, well, how can you enact all of these savings if you don't make some real substantive cuts? And that is the argument that many fiscal conservatives are making within the party. So it is a delicate balancing act. As you know, the House has a very slim margin, so that's why this is taking some extra time to work out.
Yeah. Nicole Killian, CBS News. Nicole, thank you. Appreciate the time. Take care.
You bet.
All right. Thanks. Nicole Killian there, live from D.C.